Welcome to the Confidence for Rockstar Marketers podcast. I'm Anna Iverson, a story-driven copywriter who helps you turn your stories into compelling marketing campaigns that generate obsessed megafans, not just one-off transactions.
And I'm Helen Walker, a no-fluff mindset coach who helps you throw away the beliefs that are holding you back, so you have the confidence to make your most audacious entrepreneurial dreams a reality.
On this show, we'll introduce you to the latest marketing strategies from cutting-edge industry experts, and we'll teach you how to overcome your demons so you can implement these strategies in your business right away.
If you're looking for straight-talking, no-fluff advice you can put into action right away, stick around and let's dive into the show.
So today I'm so excited that I get to interview our very own email marketing guru, Anna Iverson. Now, I have to say, pretty much everything that I know about writing content and email marketing and storytelling, I've learned from our very own Anna. Today, she's going to share her know-how and tell you exactly why email marketing is a strategy that you need to adopt if you want to create clients who love you, who rave about you and your business. Anna, a big warm welcome to our show.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure how I feel about being called a guru. That's kind of a big label to live up to. So now I'm feeling the pressure.
I think it's well deserved.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much. I'll try and be my guru-y best.
So I feel like I've pretty much tried every single marketing tactic out there. Can you share with our listeners a few of the most typical online marketing strategies? And can you also explain what a funnel is?
Okay, so most people, when they start out in online business, they'll follow a load of different gurus and all of them will have their own preferred strategy. And those can be things like all the various different social media platforms. There's email marketing. There's obviously paid advertising that you could do through Google Ads. You could use YouTube ads. You could use Facebook ads. And then there are things like webinars and challenges and, you know, all those kind of things. So the way to think about your marketing is that it all fits into a funnel. And what a funnel is basically the way that your clients first encounter you. So there's usually a diagram that basically looks like a funnel. So at the top of the funnel, this is where your ideal client comes across you and your business for the very first time. And chances are, at the top of the funnel, your client or your prospect isn't looking for you specifically. They just have a problem that they need to have solved. So it might be that they have a problem and they're scrolling through Facebook or Instagram or LinkedIn or wherever they're hanging out, and they just happen to spot something that you've posted about that catches their eye, or perhaps you're running some Facebook ads to cold traffic and whatever you've written in your ad copy catches their attention. And so they look to you as the person that's got a solution to their particular problem. Or they might go onto Google and run a search, something like, help me, my leg's falling off, can somebody help me? And then your website or your blog will pop up in the search results. So they're not looking for you specifically because they don't know about you. So that's at the top of the funnel. And this is where content marketing tends to come in. You'd either, you know, share social media posts, write blogs, have a podcast, a YouTube channel, anything that helps to solve problems, but it's not necessarily directly trying to sell to people yet because you haven't had a chance to build that relationship yet. And then as you've kind of established that relationship and people are starting to know who you are, they then move into the middle of the funnel. So they know who you are, they know that you can solve their problem, but they now want to evaluate whether or not they actually want to buy from you. So they want to know if they can trust you or not. They want to know if you're actually an expert. And they want to know if your method and your personality is a good fit for them. So this is really what you would consider the kind of nurturing stage of the relationship building process. So for this, you might have a Facebook group. You would have your email list where you'd be sending regular, preferably weekly, maybe even more often, emails to your list. You might offer free mini courses, webinars, challenges, those kind of things. Because basically your ideal client is trying to work out whether you're a good fit for them. And it also helps you to qualify whether or not they're a good lead for your business. And then finally, if the fit is there for both you and the client, they'll then move down into the bottom of the funnel, which is where they're at the purchase stage. And once they get to this stage, they're pretty much ready to buy, but they want to know what it's going to be like to buy from you and how to go about it. And this is where your promotional copy comes in, again, via email, maybe through a webinar, promotional social media post, or more conversion-focused Facebook ads where you're directly pitching a product or service. So I don't know if that's totally confused you, but those are basically the kind of stages in a nutshell of what a marketing funnel would look like.
Because I remember when I first heard this word funnel, I feel a bit daft now admitting this, but I remember going searching on Google, you know, what is a marketing funnel? And it just literally kept showing me this diagram, as you've explained it, you know, the top, the middle and the bottom. And I kept going, no, that's way too simple. A marketing funnel sounds really complicated. There must be more to it than that. So do you think people overcomplicate when you know, when they go, oh, I really don't know what a funnel is? Is it really just like the order of things, the sequence of things?
Pretty much. I think there's probably some confusion because a lot of gurus, when they're talking about a funnel, they're not really talking about it in the strictest sense of the term. They're talking about it more as the kind of lead magnet opt-in email sequence. That's what they would call a funnel. And it is a funnel. It's a type of funnel. But there are actually loads and loads of different funnels. So when somebody talks about a funnel, often they're talking about, so you've got your social media post, which would then lead them to an opt-in page, which would then take them to a lead magnet, which would then take them to an email nurture sequence, which would then possibly take them to a purchase link for a paid product or service. And often I think people get bogged down then in the tech side of things because they think, oh God, I've got to build a landing page, I've got to set up a nurture sequence, I've got to understand my email marketing software. And all of that is a part of building a funnel, but that isn't actually what a funnel is. So when people get all tied up in knots, it's kind of just because they've maybe misunderstood the terminology. And actually, like you say, it's not that complicated. It's just the stages of awareness that a prospect would go through in order to go from not knowing you at all to being at the point where they're ready and willing to spend money on your products or services.
And you mentioned there, you know, like at the top of the funnel, there's things like Facebook ads and content writing, blogs and podcasts and things like that. Is it important that if, you know, if you're starting out and you've never done something like this before, is it best to focus on like one thing going into the funnel, or is it best to do everything and see what works best? I mean, what's the best strategy if you've never done this before?
Well, I mean, it can be tempting, especially online. There are so many different strategists all claiming that their strategy is the magic bullet that you need that's going to attract a consistent flow of leads that are ready to buy from you right away. And that's unfortunately not true. As much as we would like it to be true, it's just not. I mean, the thing is with marketing, it's all just trial and error. So what might work for me wouldn't necessarily work for somebody else, but you're not going to know unless you're willing to make mistakes, you're willing to get it wrong, and you're willing to sometimes just put something out there that totally bombs. That is the only way that you're going to figure out what fits your personality type, what fits the kind of marketing that you enjoy. What I wouldn't do is I wouldn't do everything all at once, but what you might do is decide that at the top of the funnel, you're going to give Instagram a try for, say, 3 to 6 months and see if you can use Instagram then to channel people to an opt-in page to sign up to your email list. And what you would want to do is you would want to be using Instagram as your top of funnel strategy, but then you would run that alongside your middle of funnel email marketing. So you would have two elements going on there in your marketing, and then you would need something at the bottom of the funnel, which would be your way of converting people. And again, you can use email marketing for that. You would just weave more promotional copy into your emails. But you might find that if you're like me, Instagram is not my favorite platform. I find it very time consuming. I find that there are so many different elements to it that I just don't have time to do, like creating the graphics and hashtag research and IGTV videos and Instagram stories. For me, it's too much. So I've tried it. I didn't love it. I put a minimum amount of effort into Instagram. For me, LinkedIn works the best. So that's where I focus most of my energy, LinkedIn and email. So what I would suggest to anybody that's just starting out is that they pick one social media platform, they roll with it for a decent number of months to get a good feel for it. And then if it's not working, just try something else. And it can be a bit deflating when you sort of, you've gone through this process of learning a new platform and posting regular content, and then you find that it's not working for you. But that's kind of the only way that you're going to find the right fit for you.
And I'd be interested to know what you think about what I'm going to say. I've been talking a lot in my Facebook group about me switching my strategy up a little bit, because I did what I thought everybody was doing, which was writing social media content and putting that out there. But as you said about Instagram, you know, it's not your favorite way of doing things. For me, writing is not my favorite way of doing things. So I think it's really important to, and I'd be interested to see what you think about, you know, not choosing something because the majority of people are doing it, but what, finding out what you like doing. So I love Instagram. I love the videos. I love creating the graphics. And it's something I can do, you know, when I'm with the kids or when I'm, you know, a passenger in the car. It's just something that I find really easy. So would you say it's about finding what you like doing rather than what you think you should be doing?
So to give you an example, when I first started out, everybody was talking about Instagram stories because it was a new thing. They brought it out to rival Snapchat. So everyone was going wild over Instagram stories and saying, like, the news feed is dead. Everybody needs to be on Instagram stories. So I signed up to a few webinars. I went to a few masterclasses. I paid for a few things to learn how to do Instagram stories. And I just hate it. I hate the fact that I've got to go on there 65,000 times a day, and it takes over my life, and I've got to carry my blooming phone around with me taking photos of my face when I've not got any makeup on. It's just not me. I don't want social media to intrude on my life to that extent. I'm just not that kind of person. So although everybody was telling me that it was the way to go, it wasn't serving me, because people can tell when you're not enjoying it, for one thing. It looks forced. So nobody's going to buy into you anyway. They're not going to like you because they're going to get a vibe that you're not comfortable there. And also, it's just going to feel painful and you're not going to stick at it. So for me, my favorite platform is LinkedIn, because it's very much just writing. People on there like reading words. So given that I'm a writer, that plays to my strengths, and I can bash out some pretty decent content that gets good engagement in really not that long at all. And when I'm doing it, I wouldn't say it's my favorite thing in the world to do, but I'm enjoying myself enough that it doesn't feel like really hard work. Whereas Instagram just feels painful to me, and I dread it. I dread having to go into Canva to create a load of graphics. It's like my worst nightmare.
I love Canva.
Why are we even friends? We don't like the same thing.
It's so funny, because everything you're saying about Instagram, I'm going, but I love that. I love everything. Because I have so many ideas throughout the day, and I go, oh, I could share this on Instagram. But if I kept popping up on LinkedIn every 10 minutes, people were going, who is this, like, crazy fool, just, you know, with her ramblings? But on Instagram, it's fine to go on and ramble and just go, right, I've had an idea. This is what I think you should know. You know, little snippets of help and advice. And I think that's why I love it, because I think that's how my brain works.
Yeah, and I think if it works for you, then go with it, because you're much more likely to stay consistent. You're much more likely to actually put in the time and the effort to do it, because it's going to feel effortless. If anything feels like a really hard slog, then you're just not going to do it. It's like going on a diet or going to the gym. If you're trying to get into a workout regime and your worst thing in the whole world is going for a 10-mile jog around the park, you'll probably do it once. You'll go out in the pouring rain and the freezing cold. You'll come back with your, like, frostbite on your ears and wet hair, and you'll never do it again. Whereas if your thing is going swimming in a nice warm swimming pool at 3 in the afternoon, and it's what you love and it relaxes you and it energizes you, then that's going to be something that you're going to want to do every week. And it's not going to feel like a chore. And it's the same with your marketing. If it feels painful, don't do it. Go find something new, because there's plenty of other strategies that you can try.
Yeah, you've definitely got to find what you like, haven't you? You know, like you say, otherwise you just don't do it, do you?
But there is one non-negotiable as far as I'm concerned, and that is email. So whether you like it or not, you do need to do email, because I mean, there are so many reasons why email is amazing. But if writing is not your thing, there are ways to get around. it being totally focused on the writing. So for example, you could write a small blurb that teases something that's in a video, for example. So you could embed a video into your email, or you could tease something and then link to a YouTube channel or an Instagram, an IGTV channel, for example. So it doesn't have to be all about writing. If you're somebody that is very creative and artistic, you can use quite graphic heavy and image heavy emails. I personally don't, because my audience doesn't want to see graphic heavy emails. They want to see written words. But again, it's whatever works for you. But there are several reasons why email marketing is so important, and why it's, unfortunately, if you don't love writing, it's not something that you can avoid, in my opinion. And so if you're all right, Helen, I'm going to run through a couple of reasons why it's so important, because I do think it's important that people understand why you can't replace email with other types of marketing strategy. As much as people like to think that it's possible, it's not.
Right, fire away.
Okay, so the first point is that when people are in their inbox, they have a very different mindset to when they're on social media, for example, or when they're on Google searching for something that's going to solve their problem. So if we take the example of being on Google, I might be searching for, let's say, my back's hurting. How do I stop my back hurting today? And they'll go onto Google and they'll tap in their search. They'll find the answer to their problem and then they're gone. Chances are they're not going to subscribe to your email list. Then they're probably never going to find your website again. It's not very sticky, and there's not much kind of return power unless that person is searching for the same thing over and over again and they keep coming back to your blog. And it's the same with social media. When somebody's on social media, they're not coming there with the intention of reading something. They're coming there to be distracted or just to kind of zone out after a hard day at work. And what they really want to see is pictures of their friends' babies or cats or dogs or what they're eating in a restaurant. They don't want to hear about you and your business. And we often kid ourselves that people do want to hear from us on social media, but they really don't. They're mostly trying to ignore you. And it's up to you kind of to stand there and go like, hello, somebody pay attention to me. And that's really sad when you put loads of effort into your content, that like understanding that people don't want to see you. They're trying to ignore you. They're trying to make you go away. Whereas when people are in their inbox, although they're not necessarily trying to read their marketing emails, they are in there with the specific intention of reading emails, and they're much more focused and they're paying attention. So if you can write a subject line that's going to grab their attention and sound interesting to them, they're much more likely to give you their one-on-one undivided attention, as opposed to Facebook, when they might be reading something and then a notification is going to flash up that somebody in a group that they like going in has said something to. So then they disappear off into the group, or a Facebook Live pops up and they'll go and watch that video instead, and you've lost them. It's much harder to capture attention on social media than when you're inside somebody's inbox.
Yeah, I can totally. I'm just thinking out exactly what you said there. When something flashes, you're gone, aren't you? But yeah, email, it's there. It's in your inbox.
Learn the tricks to building rockstar confidence so you can uplevel your business, achieve financial freedom, and live a life you love on your terms. Download my free Empower Playbook and start building the confidence you need to achieve levels of success you never thought possible. Grab your free copy by clicking the link in the show notes.
There was a conversation in a Facebook group the other day, actually, about this. And somebody was saying, oh, no, I don't use email marketing because nobody reads emails anymore. What do you think?
I think that nobody reads bad emails. That is true. Like the number of times I've heard people saying to me, email marketing is dead. And that's because they're kind of thinking back to, I don't know, like the 1990s when email first became a thing. And it was a novelty and not that many people were marketing over email. So if you got a marketing email, you were very likely to read it because you only got 5 emails a day in your inbox. And you were just like, oh, somebody sent me an email. This is so exciting. I'm going to read it.
Oh, just imagine.
I know. Can you imagine how much you'd sell? Like, amazing. But obviously, with the volume of email that's landing in people's inbox, I think the stat is something like every individual on the planet, and that includes babies and 90-year-olds. So obviously, if we average that out across the population, we're probably underselling this a bit. Every individual on the planet receives at least 15 marketing emails a day, and that's on top of their regular emails, like work emails or emails from friends. And I reckon it's probably more like 30. Chances are people are going to be ignoring the majority of those because they don't have time. But that's because most emails are really bad. They really are. Like, yeah, most emails are just spam. They're either boring, like hard teaching, like tips based, like you've got to think to digest the content kind of emails, or they're just like, your 30% discount ends today, buy this now. It's just boring. Nobody wants to read that stuff. So in that sense, yes, nobody reads emails. But if you can be the one person that's sending a great email, the benefit that you have in people's inbox is that you're not at the mercy of the algorithm like you are on any other social media platform. So everything from Google, YouTube, the podcast distributors, Facebook, Instagram, they're all feeding your content into an algorithm, and they basically decide who gets to see what you're putting out there. Whereas when you write an email, it's on you. If you write a good email, people will see it. It's going to land in people's inbox. And then the person has a choice as to whether they read it or not. And that choice is based on whether you've written a subject line that attracts their attention and sounds interesting enough. And then if they take action on it, that's down to the strength of your copy. So you have much more control. Whereas on social media, you have no control, more or less.
That makes sense. So I suppose you've just got to get, well, I suppose the headline as well, the subject line is going to be important then.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's probably where, if you want to get people into your email in the first place, that's the biggest hurdle that you need to overcome. So often people will write the email and then they'll just chuck any old subject line in, like it's an afterthought. But if you don't put any thought into your subject line, you might as well not bother writing the body copy either, because nobody's going to open the email. And so I think the most important thing to remember with any kind of marketing is that the kind of default position of your audience is that they don't want to hear from you, they don't want to read your email, and they're trying to ignore you. So if you kind of come at it from that perspective, you've got to win their attention. You've got to really respect their time and their attention, and you've got to fight hard for it. And that's, I think that's why people find this such a struggle, because it's not as easy as just showing up and saying, hi, I've sent you an email. It does take effort and it does take time, but when you've cracked it, it is amazing, and it's so much more effective than social media.
And it is really nice when they reply to your, you know, you people on your list reply, you're like, yes, they're talking back to me.
Yes. And the great thing about replying as well is that as soon as people interact with your emails, the email providers like Gmail and Hotmail, they'll start favoring your email. So one of the big fears that people have when they're sending out emails is that they're going to automatically land in people's spam folders. And so in that sense, yes, you are slightly at the mercy of the algorithm. But the way to crack that is by writing good emails that people engage with. So as soon as you get a reply from somebody, that automatically boosts your score within Google, within Gmail or Hotmail, so that then they start saying, oh, well, this person's emails are obviously the kind of emails that people actually want to interact with and they want to read. And then they'll start making sure that they always land in people's inboxes.
I can remember when I first sent an email to my subscribers, and I didn't really have many when I first started, and I was absolutely terrified. And now looking back, I shouldn't have been, because these 5 or 6 subscribers that I had probably didn't even open it. I didn't even know there was software that you could see if they'd opened it. But I was absolutely terrified about sending my first email. What advice would you have for anyone who's never sent one before, but knows that they've got to do this as part of their marketing strategy?
I think if it's down to a fear of unsubscribes, I mean, the point is, if you've got the choice between sending no emails because you're afraid that somebody's going to unsubscribe, or sending one email and your entire list unsubscribes, which is extremely unlikely, you're no worse off than you were if you didn't send the email anyway. So you might as well give it a go.
Oh, that's a really good way to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, if your email list is totally ineffective if you're not sending any emails. But people might be sitting on your email list, but they're still not hearing from you. So what's the point in having a load of dead contacts on there? And especially when you know the amount of effort that it takes to get people onto your email list. Like, it's a hard old slog to get people to sign up to your email list. You've got to be talking about your lead magnet constantly. So I totally get why people feel afraid of unsubscribes, because they've sweated for every single one of those subscribers, or they've spent money on ads to get people onto their list. So they've invested money in those leads. But if you're just going to let them sit there doing nothing, you might as well just delete your entire email list and not bother having it at all. Because it's as effective as having an entire list of unsubscribes, which, as I said, is not going to happen. Like, under normal circumstances, you'll maybe get one or two unsubscribes per email, and that's fine. Those people were never going to buy from you in the first place. The size of your list ends up just being a vanity metric then. It's just like, oh, well, I've got 100,000 subscribers on my email list. No one's ever bought from me, but it makes me feel good about myself because I've got more than that guy who's making millions of dollars a year.
Yeah. I used to really focus on people who'd unsubscribed. And now I just think, why even focus on them people? Because you just want them off your list. Because like you say, otherwise it's just a vanity metric, isn't it? So now I don't even bother looking at who unsubscribed. Would you recommend that people don't even worry about that?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't check my unsubscribes. I do look. And sometimes it does hurt when people come off your email list. And sometimes it is actually helpful to look at which emails are triggering the most unsubscribes, because it might be that you said something that maybe was pushing the edge a bit too far. You maybe said something that offended a few people.
And I probably do this all the time. I think that is exactly why people unsubscribe from my list.
But that, I mean, it's fine if a couple of people come off because you said something that repelled them. That's the whole point of marketing. But if you sent something out and you maybe told a joke and 20% of your email list unsubscribed, then that's telling you something that maybe you ought to wind it back in a bit.
We need better jokes.
Exactly. But so the other day I sent out an email, and you know, in your email marketing software, you can see who your most active subscribers are. You can see the people that read the most of your emails. And you can, if you're really nerdy, you can go into the list of people who've opened and clicked your emails, and you can see who's read your emails. And you start to recognize the names of people that are regularly on those open and click lists. And so there was a contact. I logged into my email marketing software, and there was an unsubscribe. So I went into it. I was like, oh, I wonder who that is. And it was somebody that has read all my emails, every single email I've ever sent. They've clicked all my links in every single email. And I was like, what? That actually hurt. Because I was like, I thought we were friends. You've read all my emails. I don't understand what I did so wrong in this one. And so, I mean, it does feel like a bit of a kick in the teeth, but it's just not something worth getting hung up over, because they were never going to buy from you in the first place.
I remember once somebody had put a reason for leaving was this content is irrelevant to my life. Oh my God. Like,
but then sometimes I think you have to look at something like that and just think, like, what is going on in your life that made you feel like you needed to say something that mean? Like, nobody, if happy people don't write things like that. So a few months ago, I was launching a course, like a group kind of coaching course. And so I didn't go super heavy because it was just a beta, but probably that week I increased my email traffic from one to two emails a week to maybe, I think I probably sent out about five emails. So as far as launch emails go, that was pretty soft going. And I had an email back from a girl that I've known. She lives locally to me. She emailed me back and she said, I'm really sorry. I just cannot take the number of emails that you sent me this week. I'm just finding them really overwhelming. I'm really wound up about this. I'm really upset that you would send me this number of emails. Can you please remove me from your list? And this is somebody that I've met in real life. We know each other outside of this weird online universe. And I just thought, why, there's an unsubscribe button, love. You could just click the button. You didn't need to send me that email, but she was obviously having a bad day. Yeah. And she needed to lash out. And it turned out that actually the following week, she massively started to up her own email game and sent out a load of emails. And I was like, I think I've triggered you because you wish you could send that many emails to your list, but you didn't. And so I triggered something in her. She felt the need to lash out. And that was that. And it's fine.
Awkward when you see each other at the school gates.
Well, it made for some good anonymous content anyway, the following week.
Oh dear. And what about, I mean, a lot of my clients, you know, they're new to this business life, and you know, they've either starting a business or just a couple of years in, and they right now are struggling to see themselves as an expert. So the idea of sending out a weekly newsletter with hints and tips or advice or how-tos just causes their imposter syndrome to go off the scale and, you know, go, well, who am I to tell people this kind of stuff? What advice would you give to somebody who may be procrastinating over sending their first email?
I think a lot of this comes down to perfectionism and fear of making mistakes. But the thing with particularly with writing, the only way you're going to get better is if you practice. So you're going to send some stuff out that nobody opens and nobody reads and nobody clicks. I still get emails that don't do amazingly well, and I'll kind of look at them and go, oh, well, spent 2 hours writing that. That's annoying. But I'll then go through it and have a look and say, right, that's possibly where I went wrong. I won't do that next time. This is where I can improve it. And it's all just a case of trial and error and just being patient with yourself and kind with yourself to understand that people like me, God knows how many emails I write every week for my own list and my clients' lists. Especially, you know, if I'm on a launch campaign for somebody, I might have to write 15 emails in the space of 2 days. And I'm doing that over and over again for all my clients. So if you think about the number of hours I'm spending just writing emails and the number of courses I've studied, and I've dedicated hours and hours and months and years to this. So you can't expect as a newbie that you're going to write an email and it's going to sound like Laura Bell Gray or Tarzan K. You're just not. Like, they have spent years mastering their craft. And so it's okay to not be amazing at it, but the key is not to give up. Mm. And the other thing with the kind of, you know, the imposter syndrome where you think, well, who am I to be giving this advice when there are people out there like Marie Forleo teaching the same thing that I'm teaching? Right? There's nothing that I could possibly say to my audience that hasn't already been said before. And in many cases, that's true. It's very unlikely that anybody out there on the whole planet is saying anything completely unique. We're just not. We're always borrowing ideas off everybody else constantly. Even the biggest geniuses are borrowing ideas from everyone else. And this is why I really like storytelling, because it's a way of taking a lesson that people will have heard a million times before, but then framing it in your own experience. So if you tell the story from your perspective and tie it to something that happened to you, nobody on the planet will have taught that lesson in exactly the same way. They might have taught the same idea, but they've taught it in a different way because you own your stories. You, like, nobody else sees the world in the same way as you. And so that's one really good way to get over it. Yes, people have heard this lesson before, but they've not heard it told my way.
And I think that's really important, isn't it? That's a lesson that I had to learn, was that, because I used to get nervous about sending emails and going, oh, what if this doesn't really go down well? But what if people disagree? And then I just had a complete shift in mindsets of, well, this is my email newsletter. You know, if people don't want to hear it, they can unsubscribe. But actually, this is mine. I'm allowed to talk about what I want. And actually, you know, I'm not proclaiming that I am an expert. I'm not saying I know every single thing on confidence and mindset and self-belief. But all I'm doing is just adding to the conversation, because I think more people talk about it, more people become empowered and more people have confidence. So I think I'm just one of many people just talking about it and adding my two penneth in. So I think thinking about it like that just takes the pressure off that, you know, I don't have to be an expert. I'm just saying, this is what I've done and this is what's worked for me.
And I think the thing is as well, sometimes we get tied up with this idea that we've got to be doing something that's 100% unique, and we've got to be saying something that's 100% unique. And you know your niche because you're in it. You're around people that do what you do all day, every day. You're watching videos because you're interested in what you do, obviously. So all the things that you think are obvious to you, but then to your email subscribers, you might be the first confidence coach they've ever encountered. You don't know that. You don't know if they're following anybody else that does what you do. So you're doing them a disservice by assuming that they already know all this stuff, because they might well not. All of this stuff feels obvious to you, but you might say something that absolutely blows their mind. If we use the example from last week's podcast where our guest Cindy talked about using a book as a lead magnet, she probably thinks that's like the most obvious thing in the world, but you didn't realize that was mind-blowing to you.
What?
So if you think that, like, you might share something that equally blows someone else's mind, and if you hold yourself back from that because you're afraid that somebody else has already said the same thing, then you're taking that away from them.
And my last question is something that I have to hold my hands up and say that I do still struggle with. You know, is it okay to sell in your emails?
It is absolutely okay. In fact, I would recommend that everybody sells in every single email that they send out. Obviously not in the sort of your 20% discount ends now. Your 20% discount ends in 5 minutes. It's ending in 30 seconds because that's just annoying. But even if you're sending an educational email, you should always aim to, at the end of every email, tie your lesson into one of your paid products or services and make that offer just as a soft offer. It doesn't have to be like real kind of hammering someone around the head. Just mention it in passing, give them a buying link. Or one thing that I do with my emails, and this is something that I stole from Dean Jackson, who is email legend. He has what's called an email, a super signature. So at the end of every email, you would basically list out 3 to 4 of your core offers, almost like a menu in a restaurant. And you put it in your PS and you just say, PS, here are 3 ways that you can work with me now. And you'd list them all out and put a link for people to either send an inquiry form or go to a sales page or go to your website. Because often the mistake people make, particularly in the online world where there's so much hype around launching, they feel like they shouldn't sell to their list at any point other than when it's launch season. And basically this creates 2 problems. First of all, in the kind of the downtime, you're number one, not making any money. You're also training your list that all you do is share content. And then when you actually sell them something, they then feel angry with you that you dared to enter their inbox and sell them something. So you want to get people used to the fact that you're always going to be making offers. But also when you're only selling during a launch, what ends up happening is that there might be people in that launch week who aren't ready to buy from you at that point, but it might be 2 months down the line and they suddenly are ready to buy from you. Like they've got the money. Their problem has become acute enough that they're ready to buy now. But if you only ever provide them a link to buy from you during a launch, in the interim period, they're going to go off and buy from somebody else. So you're missing out in that whole period between a launch where you're not selling anything. That's a whole load of people. You can't assume that everybody's going to be ready to buy just at the point when you're ready to sell.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I feel like I should have, well, if you're on my email list, expect a few more selling emails, because this makes perfect sense. And actually, now you say that, I feel like I've been doing people a disservice, because there's probably people out there needing what I'm selling, but I'm not making it easy for them to buy.
Yeah, exactly. There will be people who, so one of my mentors calls it bleeding neck syndrome. You don't want people to get to the point where their neck's bleeding and they're desperate. They're basically standing there going, I just really want to give you my money. Can you just take my money? And you're not giving them that option. And how silly is that? Like they're literally standing there.
It really is.
Earlier this week, I was doing a research call with a customer of a online education company, and I spoke to him on the phone, and he said to me, well, what I found at the end of the program was that I've just wanted more support. So I spoke to the instructor and I asked if I could give him some money for closer support, and he said, no, we don't have anything available. And he was like, but I want to give him my money. I am willing to pay him thousands of pounds for extra support, and he won't take my money, and that's really annoying. And I was like, there are people out there that are literally dying to give you money and you're not allowing them because you're not giving them the option to buy from you.
Because we're just making it about us, aren't we, rather than them?
Yeah. And there will, at some point in every email that you send, there will probably be one person whose problem is severe enough, whose need is great enough, who has the resources and the time to invest in you, that wants to buy and they can't because you're not telling them how.
Well, this is certainly my biggest takeaway from our conversation is to, just like you say, to sell. And it's not about me, it's about them. And you know, I don't want anyone to be neck bleeding by the time they come to me. So I've got to start selling more.
Or if their neck is bleeding, you don't want to just leave them hanging. How awful is that?
I don't want to leave them hanging, no. Well, I hope we've inspired other people to start using email in their marketing strategy. Where can people find out more about you and what you do?
So the best thing to do, probably, if you want to find an easy way to incorporate storytelling into your email marketing, is to go onto my website, which is www.wordistry.co.uk, and I'll stick a link in the show notes. And when you go on the homepage, there's one of those really annoying pop-ups that comes up and asks for your email address. If you just hold your nose and fill your email address in on that, then that will send you over my free email story generator ebook, which walks you through the process that you need to go through to pick the right stories to send to your email list, depending on what your objective is. So whether that's educating or selling, it'll help you to decide exactly what you need to share in whatever email you're writing.
I am a little bit biased, but Anna's helped me out loads with my my marketing, so I can vouch for her. She's brilliant.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you're feeling inspired now to up your email game and start making more sales over email. If you want to carry on the conversation, then make sure you hop over to our free Facebook group, the Confidence for Rockstar Marketers group. You'll find a link to the group in our show notes, so jump over to the notes after you've listened to this episode and click the links to join in the conversation. See you again next week.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to keep up to date with all our future episodes, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and make sure you leave us a 5-star review. Or share us with a friend that you think will benefit from our content.